For August the 17th, 2018, we talk about the infectious madness of Dr. Decker, the real price of fake real estate, and we ask you which game worlds you would most and least like to live in. Welcome to Level 253. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is Stephen Meissman.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Rocking it three style tonight. Thank you so much for being here. All of us. Me too. Thanks. Thanks all around.
Hooray,
yeah.
Cole.
Yeah, I've got kind of a cool thing that's happening, but I don't want to jinx it by talking about it too early. So I'm going to leave people in suspense. I've already mentioned it in the Slack, but putting it on the show somehow feels different. So
It is a different thing. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah, I will. I will defer the banter. Let me see here, David. Were you here last time?
Yes, I was.
Yes, you were. Both of us were here last time. All three of us were here last time. So there's nobody to like jump to first. Jolly, you always have interesting stuff going on. What's going on?
Like I've been beginning teaching Camp Gladiator, so that's been a lot of fun, teaching boot camp style workouts. And I co-led part of a workout with my area director for the first time on Friday. And, you know, like I'm not new to teaching fitness. I used to teach fitness before, but it was Tae Bo, which is taught in a very different way. So the thing about it is I ran them through the workout. And then after that, on Monday when I got back and I was running another workout with my area director, like there was a new lady there who's like, "Oh, you're Jala. I heard about you."
And I'm like, that's not a great way to start a conversation.
It's just like, I heard that you had a pretty challenging workout and all this other stuff. Mm. And so I was like, well, okay, that's good. That's good.
Hi, your reputation precedes you.
I know, like one time.
Damn you, Jala, I read your workout.
Yeah, right. So anyway, so I'm going to be doing more of that soon. And also, we as a community are going to be doing Dragon Boat Racing again. Remember, guys, when I did that last year, I was doing Dragon Boat Racing. Yeah, like we apparently are going to be rummaging up more teams to do that again. So
sweet.
The real challenge is catching the dragon and convincing it to let you ride on it.
Well, you hollow it out. Right. It's fine.
So... other than that, the Saharan dust is making everything dry, which is actually kind of nice because that means the humidity isn't kicking the temperatures over 100 degrees, too far over 100 degrees. It's only like 101, 102, not 108. So,
hey, Jala, can you do something real quick? Why is there Saharan dust in Houston?
Well, Saharan dust is a thing that shows up all the time. Like, it's just one of those things that is carried by the trade winds or whatever.
Okay.
And that actually helps to... fertilize the rainforests, if I'm not mistaken, in Central America and Central and South America. But like, for some reason, there's just an excess of it this year, probably climate change. And yeah. So it's just gotten to where it's in Houston, and it's been a Saharan dust to the point that there is a big pall, kind of like a fog around the city that's just the dust, and there's like air advisory warnings for people with breathing issues like my dad and things like that, that they're not supposed to be outside because the dust is so thick and it will cause problems. So yeah, like that's a thing. The Saharan dust has invaded Houston.
Mm. So that's, Saharan dust sounds like a sports team. We are the Saharan dust.
Well, I mean, speaking of what was the earlier conversation with elephants, you know, I feel like if you've got Saharan dust, it's just a matter of time before Houston gets elephants.
Well, yeah, they grow out of it, so it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
The dust carries their spores.
Well, for people listening, the reference was in the green room. We were talking about the painting that I am not quite finished with that is... the current commission I'm working on, it is of a lady's daughter and an elephant because the daughter had recently gone to Thailand. Hmm. So there is an elephant in this painting. And so we got into this whole conversation.
Just about elephants and it being depressing that we cage them and stuff like that.
It's actually much surprisingly difficult to find like fake taxidermied animals, if that makes sense.
What? So you're saying that like counterfeit taxidermy is not as common as I was led to believe?
Well, when I say that, like, for example, I really wanted for my wall, because I have weird decorating things, I wanted I wanted one of those deer heads, but I didn't want to, you know, actually kill a deer.
Right.
And so I figured it should be super easy to just find someone that makes, like, you know, a fake deer head.
Right.
And it turns out it is not.
What you got to do, you know, just find one of those assholes out in the country who puts a fake deer in their front lawn to get passing motorists to slow down because they think a deer's about to run into their car. Find one of those and then behead that and then put it up on your wall.
there you go.
Statue, yeah.
I would rather have like a plastic lawn flamingo on like a little mount on my wall. Mm-hmm. That would entertain me a lot more.
I did love one of the Monster Hunter games. Their like advertising campaign was just a guy, like redneck dude, driving around in a pickup truck with like the body of, I don't know, some sort of giant dragon thing in it. You know, the way people do with deer.
Okay.
And just like posing with it and like being super proud of like, yeah, this is like a 10-point monster or whatever.
That'd be very strange if dragons had points.
I don't know. Some dragons have antlers, right?
I mean, horns.
Now, some of them have antlers, too, yeah, depending okay. upon what country you're in. So.
I guess what I'm saying is I do not want to be dragged out of the box when it comes to my mythical creatures. There are only certain kinds of dragons that exist, and I will put my foot down.
Interesting random fact. There's
the
now
second one of the show.
Sorry,
please.
a lot of evidence that actually, like, you know, in the same way that a lot of you'll see the like pictures from the Middle Ages of like, oh yeah, this is totally a tiger, and it looks nothing like a tiger. Because, you know, someone just told the artist about it, but he'd never seen one.
Right.
There's some evidence that that's basically the reason that European dragons don't look like Chinese dragons, is someone saw a Chinese dragon and described it to someone, and, you know, that was what they ended up drawing.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know what to do with that, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Well, anything cool going on with you, David?
I will soon be moving to New York, so that's going to be an adventure.
Yeah.
So not much to say about that. I'm trying to figure out where the hell I'm gonna live.
Right.
It's completely crazy because New York is like what? Highest population density in America and something like fifth in the world or something.
Right.
So it's just a madhouse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it'll be fun. I would like to go back there, not to live, because I like my space and I like quiet, but it would be neat to spend time there. So I'm somewhat envious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've got the usual kind of show for you. We're gonna do the brief. We're going to do the multiplayer, and we're going to do the grind. But first here, let's do
the brief.
The brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, your story seems pretty fun, and also it's tied into the multiplayer. So let's start with this.
Okay, so LNC Mortgages decided to come up with real-world costs of video game real estate for some reason. I'm not sure why they spent the time and resources to do this, but it was fun. So conversion rates to real-world money were basically the first step that they had to go through in order to get all of this going on. So basically they used food and the relative scarcity in the world of the food and things like that to make the equivalence of, you know, how much some kind of food cost in the game versus how much it would cost in real life. So, for example, one septim from Elder Scrolls translates to 1.8483 pounds or $2.36. Huh. So by that logic, Proudspire Manor would be 46,208 pounds or $58,881.
Okay.
And like you can go through, there's actually a site, I linked it as well for you guys here. That has the, you might want to put it in the show notes just for other people to take a look at.
Oh, for sure.
Cole, here we go. I just relinked it just so you can see it again. It has some of the other reports, like the full report of this thing. Like home plate in Fallout 4 would cost $831 or thereabouts. The Eclipse Towers from Grand Theft Auto San Andreas would run you over $1 million, like $1 million. $38,285. And they also have properties in the universes for Zelda, Witcher, Sims, Stardew Valley, and Final Fantasy 14. So
the design of this is just beautiful. This is great.
Yeah, like the design of the website and everything is actually pretty cool. So yeah, like overall it's really kind of cool and a little surprising to just see this out of nowhere for some reason. But it was very well done. So, and like they've even got like the base cost and the fully furnished cost for like Skyrim, and it tells you how to buy a house in Skyrim, and it tells you like all of those and all that information. And it's kind of great. And it has the conversion charts for you know, pounds, sterling, and US, and then euros and yen and all of that. Like it has all of that stuff in there, which is pretty cool. And they even have a link where it says how we worked this out, and you can go into the details about how they sorted out how much this stuff would cost.
Huh.
So I feel like, though, you know, a lot of these show, you know, particularly the fantasy ones, are pretty dramatic, you know, difference in price. Mm-hmm. Although I feel like a lot of that is probably a metric of you know, the fact that in like a pre-industrial, you know, pre-capitalist society, there mm-hmm. are two types of people in the world: those who, you know, who can build up wealth, and those that don't.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like the thing is, like, there's then, you know, much less of a difference between, like, here's what you get, you know, paid so that you don't die this week,
mm-hmm.
versus like actually, you know, being able to save up anything to buy that stuff.
Well, and then too, like say for example in Fallout world, how important is real estate versus food or right. something, you know, like that's why it's so devalued in that universe, because it, you know, real estate, that's not what everybody cares about in that particular right. I see, know, place.
Lots of empty houses is kind of a Fallout thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you don't even really need to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although I do figure it costs, wait, do they say how much a meal costs in Fallout, roughly?
If you go to the how we calculated this, it will tell you all of that. And they focus on the food as a main source of that information, well, so...
So, because when I feel like the one thing that is interesting is that in the Fallout, or at least in Fallout 4, it costs 40 caps to be completely cured of radiation poisoning, or 15 caps to, you know, be completely healed, including setting any fractures,
mm-hmm.
which means, you know, after a worldwide apocalypse, you know, the America's healthcare system actually improves.
Well, take it. Yeah, for right. But like the thing is that if you click on the how we worked this out, it gives you a little description in a paragraph, and then they even have conversion tables. So it links all of that stuff and talks about how they weighed, and they even have like they have a a spreadsheet for you to look at with like all of the foods and how much everything cost and, you know, all of that. And then how they like they did weighted scores depending upon what is extremely scarce, i.e. like a fresh piece of fruit is, you know, more scarce than canned food is, that kind of a thing. So yeah, like it's pretty badass.
Of course, the house in Toussaint costs more than $1 million.
Yeah.
this is really cool, Jala. Good catch.
Yeah, yeah, I just was like, okay, this is the kind of bonkers shit that I pay attention to. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool. I think I want to talk about this. And I encourage people to go and look at the show notes and pull that link and take a look at it, because the site itself, the design of the report on their website is very cool. Mm-hmm. And also, like, the information that's in there is very well considered and knowledgeable. So, yeah. Very awesome.
You had me at spreadsheets.
Yeah, in terms of how this happened, I think the answer is being an actuary is basically being a professional nerd.
Being a nerd psychic.
Yes, a nerd psychic.
Very cool. Yeah, check out the notes for that. If only to if the numbers don't excite you, then the web design on this ought to.
Oh, yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah. Let's see. I've got one that might be a little bit meaty for us to chew on, or not. Who knows?
Well, I'm kind of sideswiping it for mine, in that like mine is directly related to this one, so I feel like we can afford to give it some time.
I was saving that for the segue, David.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. No. So Bethesda caught a lot of people's attention over the past week or so, when they went to just a guy on Amazon who was selling a sealed copy of The Evil Within 2 and threatening him with legal action if he did not take it off of the marketplace. what is contentious is the fact that he was selling it labeled as new. You know, it was in the shrink wrap, is what this guy said. The seller's name is Ryan Hupp, but Bethesda's legal representation basically said, well, what you're doing is actually harming us, because when people go to buy a new Bethesda product, we don't want them to buy something that somebody opened up, played for several hours, kicked across the floor, and then resealed.
And they claim that their products come with a warranty, which I really want to now see someone collect on that.
Right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. They're saying like, oh, there's no way of knowing he didn't open up and redeem the cards, et cetera, et cetera. Basically coveting the idea that the new designation is a magical writ of guarantee that can only be bestowed upon a product that is passed through a retail outlet or a distributor that Bethesda has control over. So, well, they want him to sell this sealed copy as used, or to open it up and, you know, make it just make it used, right?
Well, yeah. My understanding is they also actually weren't even fine with them selling it as used, because they argue that you only have the right to sell it used through certain approved distributors or something.
So this is where they get a little bit hinky, because, you know, they say, oh, we're fine with people selling
this
it.
This is?
Oh, well, I mean, so that's another area where they get a little bit hinky, because, like, oh, people sell used games all the time. It's good. It's fine, et cetera, et cetera. I think, you know, like, maybe part of their problem was, and this is really more just ambiguity on Amazon's part than anything, because, like, when you go to buy something, and you say, hey, I want to buy this new, it will either come, mm-hmm. it will either be like fulfilled by Amazon from a particular distributor. It'll be something that Amazon actually bought and kept in stock for itself, or it will go to the marketplace. And it's unclear, like, which of those categories, it's unclear to me which of those categories he was trying to sell in. But, like, I don't know. I've looked up the prices of a lot of games, and they're almost always like, you know, new, used, and then various conditions of used, including like collectible. Collectible, mm-hmm. oftentimes meaning, yeah, well, it's still sealed in the box.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, counterfeiting is a major, major problem on Amazon.
Absolutely.
So, and, you know, one of the issues with it is if you're shipping through Amazon, which, you know, is very, very common because otherwise you can't really do Prime shipping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of the games in this case go into one bin in the warehouse. So even if when he says it's new, he's telling the truth, it's possible that someone who buys from him actually gets someone else's game that maybe wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, as much as this is total BS, like, That at least, you know, there's a little shred of rationality to it.
Oh yeah, they're there's ambiguity in the system, but like, mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like singling out one dude who can go to Polygon in this case and make you look terrible is like the best way to go about it. You know, yeah. I would turn around and, you know, not to do like a whataboutism thing here, but like, I don't know, how many times have I talked about how, you know, I'll never buy a new game from GameStop because, mm-hmm. you know, because they open them, they gut them. It's called gutting. Take a new game, you want to have it on the shelf, open it up, you take it out, you put it in the sleeve, and then like, you know, sometimes when you go to sell it, you just put it in shrink wrap, re-shrink wrap it. The shrink wrap looks different, but, you know, who knows? And like, that's how we took new games home to play. That's how we checked them out.
You know? How do they even have a shrink wrap machine? Like, that seems like that's... I don't know. I feel like that basically shows, like, intent to fraud.
No, like, you didn't just shrink wrap stuff that you were trying to sell as new. Like, you would shrink wrap stuff together, systems. It's, like, a useful thing. Also, by shrink wrap machine, I mean, like, a big roll of a big roll of plastic wrap and a heat gun.
Okay.
Yeah. So, that's actually kind of cool.
Well, back in the day, long, long ago, when I worked at Hollywood Video, we had a shrink wrap machine, but it's because we shrink wrapped all of the stuff that we sold as used as well.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, like, even if that happened, it wouldn't be that big of a problem because you've got a warranty.
Yep. The warranty is how you know it's good. Yeah, I could take a crap in a box, put a warranty on it. Tommy
yeah,
Boy classic.
So this whole thing seems super questionable, and I know I read this actual article earlier in the week. Like, did it kind of sticks in my mind that, you know, some of it got a little bit threatening-y?
Oh yeah, I mean they straight up said, if you don't take this off, we will serve you. So I don't know if it was like an official cease and desist. They didn't even go through Amazon as the channel. I don't think. I think they just like went directly to him.
Yeah, and that's no bueno. Like, you should be going through Amazon. You should be addressing this with Amazon if you have a problem with Amazon. You know, like how Amazon works from one giant company to another. But whatever.
Whatever. It's goofy. It's goofy. I think that this is a problem that is eventually going to go away, especially, you know, when digital, you know, becomes more of the norm than it already is. But I just, Bethesda, this isn't the first time they have like filed weird lawsuits. So I don't know, just them continuing to live up to form.
Interestingly, speaking of, you know, this being a problem that could soon go away, Bloomberg actually had an interesting article earlier this week, you know, discussing the fact that, you know, Americans now, you know, own very few of the things they own.
Tell that to the many, many boxes of books and video games behind me.
Right. Right. Yeah,
could continue. Well, that's anecdotal. Yeah. I didn't mean to. Just...
Yeah. No. So, you know, the fact that, you know, people generate. Well, and I was thinking, like, Most of the hosts here don't own their house. What, like, people don't, no one actually owns their car.
Right.
You don't own your phone or your computer generally.
Well, I mean, even if you, I mean, you, even if you do own the phone or the computer, as long as like the phone is not subsidized or under a lease or something like that, you don't have permanent ownership of the stuff that makes it work.
Well, so then you don't own it.
But I mean, like
Like,
the distinction being, like, I still own the box. This big piece of glass that I'm looking at is still mine.
I would contest that, but that's kind of the point of the art. The point of that's actually kind of the point of the article is that, basically, the concept of ownership is increasingly, being eroded, and that's kind of a problem because you eventually get to the point where, like, if most people actually don't own anything of significant, like
We are all
most people then,
serfs.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly, and most people no longer have a stake in the system. Or on
Right.
the other hand, if you are one of the people that owns lots of things, this should be worrying because, like, we live in a democracy, so it's if you want people to care about property rights, it's probably in your best interest that everyone has property.
Yeah, so this
So.
is skin in the game. This feels like a, I mean, this feels like a battle that was lost a long, long time ago, though. I
Yeah.
mean, like even specifically down like intellectual property rights. I mean, are we specifically talking about media in this case, or are we talking about just kind of everything in general? Because the examples that I see here, the primary one being people don't own books. They have a Kindle.
I feel
Amazon
like
owns owns the book itself. You're just kind of like leasing the right for them to serve it to you for as long as they have it available to them. But like, I don't know. I own the book. I own the physical object, but I don't own the words inside.
See, I feel like, but you can do anything you want with that book is the difference, and no one can take it from you.
Yeah, I could take screenshots of my Kindle stuff and print that out and do whatever I want with
Not legally.
that, though. Well, I can't. I can't photocopy a book and go down to the street and hand out free copies of it.
True, but you can photocopy a book and, make a collage out of it, and likewise, they can't at a later date decide to, censor the book.
Right.
But I would say I think the books are kind of the frame story for this article, but I think the
Yeah.
larger thing would be issues like, they cite, for example, John Deere tractors that, do things, basically won't allow farmers to repair their tractors.
Right. Or if you buy certain cars, there's a lock on the mechanism for doing an oil change and stuff like that.
Right, exactly. So I think the larger thing is, not necessarily think things like that or, Kindle or Netflix, where it is like a legitimate convenience factor so much as it is the issues, like Bethesda, things like that, where there's either no avenue for ownership, or be things like the cars and stuff, where it's just like, taking physical, possessions and, not allowing people to actually own them and use them.
Yeah. I don't know. The hope would be that, even though a lot of people, have decided that they don't care about this, just like, yeah, that's why it's allowed to happen. That's why we don't buy movies anymore. We subscribe to Netflix and we have the movies that they decide to make available to us. The hope would be that anything particularly onerous will just be outright rejected. I'm looking at things specifically like, many years ago, the DivX format where you would buy the disc and then you had to like dial into a modem to make it work. and you would have it for 3 days, and then the disc was useless after that, unless you paid just an exorbitant amount of money to own it and unlock it permanently. Or up to more recently, like the Juicero. You remember Juicero, right?
No.
Juicero was a crowdfunded, it was a crowdfunded juicer. You think, okay, fine. You know, so somebody made a better juicer. They decided to fund it on Kickstarter. The thing is, it was a $400 juicer that didn't actually have like blades or things. It was just a press. All right. It was just a press that would squeeze juice out of pre-made pulp packs that you subscribed to. the thing had to be connected to the internet because these pulp packs had DRM. Pulp packs. These pulp packs had DRM. So when you put it in, it had to scan the bags that you subscribed to make sure they were legit before it would squeeze.
People went for this?
Many people bought it, but not enough to make it a successful company or an ongoing or a going concern because they went out of business. And now a lot of people have internet connected squeezers that won't squeeze no more.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. But like, no, people don't want DRM on their fucking juice.
Yeah, well, although they're fine with it on, their cars and computers and phones and a whole bunch of things that are much more important.
Yeah.
Yep, and not having the right to repair it. Like, we used to repair our own vehicles, but because of all the computer chips and stuff in cars now, it's basically almost impossible to repair your own vehicle anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, then the article talks about the John Deere tractors where basically people have to hack into them if they want to try to fix them themselves.
Yeah,
and of course, you can't fix, an iPhone by yourself. You have to, you have no right to bust open the iPhone and try to fix it. You have to take it in, that kind of thing.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah. I don't know. Where I fall down on it is it's just a battle that was lost a long time ago. If you do see where we're at as a position of having lost.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the battle's still being fought.
I think people are suddenly
Electronic Freedom Foundation.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like now becoming more of an issue and starting to be shown in the media a little bit more. But
well, and also I think it's important to realize, like, this stuff is mostly illegal in the civilized parts of the world. It's just America that kind of has these problems.
Yeah. Oh, God bless us.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
I asked, what video game world would you most and least like to live in? A lot of people answered this question. This was like on the tip of everybody's tongue, apparently.
let's go for it. Austin opens us up here with one that is actually pretty common as I scan this, saying, I would most like to live in Stardew Valley since all I would have to do is peaceful farming. Least would be Fallout because, well, Fallout.
Yep.
Stardew Valley would be great. It's pastoral, but there is still like comfort and technology and stuff like that, but it's just
so I guess, are we assuming like the game's depiction of a given activity? Because like I feel like actual farming is just about the worst thing ever.
True Yeah, let's assume the game's depiction that that the activity is just as satisfying or dangerous or onerous as it is depicted.
Fair enough.
Yeah. my impression is you don't really get rich off of farming unless you're a huge,
you're an aggro farmer.
Yeah. You're like aggro farmers, unless you're on the aggro crag. No, it's just a huge company. But in Stardew, you can be pretty prosperous.
You if you pull aggro from the aggro farmers.
Oof. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, so I'm not sure if this answer is allowed, as it started out as the TV show in the lair in the games. As a side note, TV shows always allowed. But the world I'd most like to live in is the Star Trek universe. I've always been a big sci-fi fan, and there are games based on that. For at least Fallout, depressing, ruined, radioactive world with raiders and fiends running around. Enough said.
And then Greg apologizes for saying Fallout. There's going to be a lot of
common.
Fallout.
It is fine.
Don't worry.
There's overlap.
It is fine. Yeah. I mean, Star Trek would be fantastic because it's post scarcity, you know?
See, I feel like
per the previous discussion, are you against replicators?
No, I would say more I would argue Star Trek's actually a dystopia because it's basically a single monolithic culture that's that everyone believes the same, acts the same, dresses the same, and that's the only reason they have peace is because everyone is there's no actual differences of opinion or lifestyle.
In the humans, it seems that way, but not with all of the other cultures out in the galaxy. But that's something that I'd thought about. I grew up watching Star Trek a lot, but
That's why a lot of the cultures, at least this is more DS9 version of the only Star Trek I particularly enjoy. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons a lot of the cultures that don't like the Federation opposed to them is because they're basically taking over and homogenizing the universe.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yep.
Yeah. Jala, what does Nick say?
Nick says, most Stardew Valley. Everybody is very friendly and seems to be doing well, and there's just enough weird stuff going on beneath the surface to keep things interesting. Least, Bloodborne. It would feel like being in Groundhog's Day, but with significantly more eldritch horrors.
Yeah, there are not many invisible eldritch horrors in Groundhog Day. Aside from Chris Elliott, there's something going on with that guy.
he just never built up enough insight.
Yeah. He couldn't see the loop. Bloodborne's a good answer. Mike says, most Oblivion, because those morning runs through the woods would be so beautiful. Least, Warhammer 40K, because I'll bet that power armor chafes something fierce. Yeah, that and also the religious bigots and the star fascists. Yeah.
So when he's doing the morning runs through the woods, is that with the never ending guard that will just chase you across the entire continent? Because that's a little bit different.
Yeah. I mean, when
very pretty, except you'd have this dude yelling at you the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you need someone to draw aggro from all of the Sorrow Spider. Or no, Sorrow Spider is our different thing, but all of the giant spiders.
Just your morning run turns into your afternoon run, then your evening run. I'm sorry, did I say run? I meant pursuit. Your morning pursuit become
40K, I feel like is one of the most comprehensively dark universes. Unless you're living in Tau space, you're basically fucked.
Yeah. David, what does Mark say?
Mark says, assuming I'm not a primary character, most something simple and easygoing, Animal Crossing or something of the like, where your only concern are catching bugs, fish, and all your crippling debt, which is interesting going back to Jala's story.
too real.
Least, Diablo. I feel I don't even need to clarify. Pretty much nothing ever ends well.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, you have skeletons on your side for a little bit. Emphasis on little bit. Jala, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, most likely would be No Man's Sky because I'm an adventurer at heart, and least likely Ark Survival because raptors, LOL. Yeah. I can see that, although, come on, dinos.
Yeah. I mean, eventually, again, you get the dinos on your side for a little bit. Emphasis on a little bit. Yeah.
Although we've already maintained that Jala is technically a trainer of dinosaurs.
Have we?
I am.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because you're a bird. Yeah.
Yes.
So technically, what you're doing is very brave.
Well, I've actually got, my birds, and I also have my lizard,
Oh,
so.
shit, right, yeah.
Yeah, don't forget Indra.
No,
was
so
I
tiny.
was super shocked. This is blatant tangent. I was thinking the other day about the whole like birds are technically dinosaurs things, and I was thinking like, yeah, but modern birds are basically like those little tiny like annoying yappy dinosaurs.
Yeah, you get ostriches.
So I went to look like, has humanity ever like was humanity ever around at a time when like one of the super crazy like killbeast dinosaurs were around?
Or
And
birds?
apparently the moa, which
Oh
were
yes,
wiped out by the Maori, were
yeah,
like
the giant
some.
chocobos, yes. Yeah.
No,
Have we had this conversation?
No,
it's a
we
thing.
just there's a giant moa skeleton at my science museum here in town. So I guess we didn't go to the science museum when you were here, but if we had and we had gone to the paleontology wing, you would have seen the giant moa.
Well, I didn't realize they were like literally twice as tall as a human being, which is
They're
horrifying.
chocobos. Yes.
Yeah,
Chocobos were
chocobos
real.
are not twice as tall as a person.
Well, then you also have you have condors and albatrosses. Like
Yeah.
albatross can get up to 3.5 meters in
Oh, really?
in a wingspan. Yeah.
And even worse, if you do fight one and manage to kill you, then or kill
It
it,
will be a
then the
harbinger of
entire
ill
ocean
tides.
turns against you.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh man, I need to get back to Facebook here. Ollie says the most would be Hitman. It's a world where you could live your life unmolested by the huge events going on around you, and assassins have to at least try to keep order. That's good. You want your contract killers to have shame. Least.
Although I feel like isn't that basically just life in America? You ignore the rest of the world and just count on our assassins to keep order.
Yeah. Go back to sleep.
Yeah.
The least would be Grand Theft Auto Online. The exact opposite of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. Original answers.
Yeah. David, what does Steven say?
Steven says, I would most like to live in the Pokemon games, catching Mons and traveling the world by myself. Least would be the Silent Hill universe. Really don't want to see my past mistakes try to kill me.
See, it's in Silent Hill, it's all about perspective. You know, if you just side with the cult, then guess what? It's paradise.
Sure.
I'm
Sure,
giving you
Cole.
the side eye so hard right now.
Oh. Jala, what does John say? If that is
John
his real name.
says, yes, Secret Agent Man says, most Koholint Island from Link's Awakening, least Fallout or Shin Megami Tensei.
Can I spoil a 28-year-old game?
Yes.
Koholint Island would be great until the whale wakes up.
Yeah, until Link commits genocide.
Right. I mean, you just had to play that song. There's one song that you didn't. Man. Yeah. David, what does Franz say?
Franz says, most Mother 3. Even the monsters are wholesome and friendly and give you presents. And your neighbors are awesome friendly dinosaurs. No, this is based on the first 30 minutes of the game. Never got past that point.
It gets grim. It gets grim, my friend.
Least near. Everyone is telling me to do their stupid chores while I'm in the middle of a hardly noticeable apocalypse. Weird monsters everywhere, and it will all end in tears anyways. On the bright side, I get three amazing companions, and I'll still love the experience.
That makes one of us.
Wow.
Yeah, it'd be cool to bum around with Kaine and Emil and Vice. Like, that'd be fun. I just don't like anything I do with them. Oh.
Damn it, you guys have bad hobbies.
Jala, what does Michael say?
Michael says, most Deus Ex, I feel like it wouldn't be too much of an adjustment. Giant mega corporations running the world, hate directed at the different. I feel like I could deal with more of the same, especially if I got sweet robot arms and lots of swank architecture.
I've got laser eyes. Good.
Least Fallout. Dying slowly of radiation poisoning is bad enough. Even worse, at any given moment, death claws could happen.
Yeah, Cazadores. Yep. I don't know. All these people saying least as Fallout would really make me it's making me want to look for a good reason to live in Fallout times. Oh well.
Think you've got some time yet?
Yes. Juan says, Spira from Final Fantasy X, salvaging tech with the Albed and a world where you can breathe underwater with no explanation.
The
least would be Doom. Fast action is good for a while, but I'd need some sleep after a few hours of slaying, let alone eternity.
You know,
eventually, if you live in Doom times and hell is not on Earth, hell will always eventually be on Earth. But hey, free, cheap, unlimited energy. So thumbs up. David, what does Gordon say?
Gordon says, Pokemon's world would be a pretty neat place, filled with monster friends that love you. The worst would probably be the Dominion strategy game. Every game eventually degenerates into a pitch-dark frozen hellscape, where everyone is aging 12 times faster while being harvested by vampires and policed by roving bands of wolves. What is this game?
Well, it looks like you need to find minions.
Kind of sounds badass.
Yeah, right? That sounds hardcore.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this.
Wishlisted? Jala, what does Justin say?
Justin says, most any Tex Murphy game similar to Blade Runner, but somehow less depressing. Cars can fly. Least Vermintide. Gross.
One of my big, fantasy world wishes is I want I want some fantasy setting to basically have a good equivalent of the Skaven. I guess this is, maybe it's for the good guys in Fallout, just like a society entirely based around trash.
Yeah. I mean, it's present in Dark Souls too. You got them rats running around doing their stuff.
Oh, do you? I that's the only Dark Souls game I've not played.
There's a faction that is a rat kingdom. You can ally with them and it sets up almost like a tower defense kind of thing where people invade your dungeon and try to get to the goal. But you set up traps and fight them and stuff.
Nice. That sounds actually kind of awesome.
Let's do. So that was you, Jala, reading Justin's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's do one more time around because we're coming up on time here. Roop says, most Gabriel Knight 2, the golden 90s and simple life. Also, all the vice first. Least I have no mouth and I am a scream. Just no. That's an exclusive club, my friend, to get into the I have no mouth-averse. Yeah. Gabriel Knight 2 is a really, really good answer. Except for the presence of some werewolves, you just get to hang around Munich. Good stuff. I want to play that game again so bad. I need to find an excuse to do a hex crank on that. David, what does Jack say?
Jack says, almost no game had a better wonder factor than Witcher 3. I'd stake out a nice spot in
Skellige.
I do not speak Polish. Skellige?
Skellige?
Skellige, personally. Least, does Frogger count? That constant traffic sounds miserable.
Frogger counts, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, think about how polluted that river is, just for a second.
Also, as a side note, I think Sam accidentally responded to Jack instead of posting.
Okay.
So his response is in the thing.
Okay, well, then I'll read his.
Yeah.
Sam says, most Pong, least Virtua Fighter.
Man.
That's original.
I think Pong. Pong might be goat. Pong might be a very good answer. It's so simple.
It's very zen. Yep. You know.
Tennis, anyone?
Yeah. I'm wondering about Virtua Fighter, though. Like, does that have a plot?
So the characters definitely have stories, and they they definitely change, like, as entries go on. I know nothing about the world aside from there's tournaments, and also God is a shiny person.
I don't remember. I actually own some Virtua Fighter 2 maybe, and I actually had read the manual, you know, back in the day when they had manuals and stuff like that to try to discern what the story was, and I haven't cracked that open in like fucking 10 years at least, so like I don't know what anything's about in that game.
Dural was previously a human woman. Her name was Tsukikage. She was blah, 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 a bunch of this. When the mysterious corporation Judgment Six noticed her exemplary fighting ability and resilient body, they captured her and used her as their prototype for their terrifying Dural project. And she became a tech demo for the Sega Saturn or for the arcade. So fun.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. So that's so sorry we didn't get to everybody, but a lot of you answered.
Yeah, there's a lot of other ones we still didn't get to.
A lot of you, yeah.
Wow.
So for me, most would be the World of Mist.
Of course.
Yes. Just because I don't know. Even when it does broach into the real world, things tend to get, you know, really really surreal and very very calm. Surreal and serene, let's say. Least would be the World of Pathologic, specifically the town on the River Gorka. Just because of all of the horror games that I've played, that is the most dismal setting.
Hmm.
Yeah. You're going to die. Yeah. So, David, how about you?
I'd say I think for most, I'd probably go with, I guess, Warframe. I think I really dig the, like, the alien, you know, design and settings and worlds and stuff like that. And it's about the only game I can think of that does that sort of stuff. And it isn't just exclusively, depicted as negative.
Right.
I would say least, probably No Man's Sky. Just because of
does it existentially upset you?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Just because it very deeply bothers me.
Jala.
So, I would be in Rockman X world as a Reploid. We talked about, Mega Man X, whatever you want to use. We were talking about that last week. I actually wrote up like my own comic in that universe with Reploids and stuff at one point and was, you know, working on that for a while. Or in Knights as a Nightmarin. That would be really fun. But I realized that I actually had a problem imagining living in one of these worlds as a normal-ass human until I remembered that Magic Knight Rayearth, which is an anime series, but it was also a video game until Magic Knight Rayearth was around. Because in Sephiroth, the world of Magic Knight Rayearth, normal-ass girls from our world are transported there to become Magic Knights. And basically, in the world of Sephiroth, your will is your reality. Like, you can will yourself, you know, to have magic. You can will things to happen. And, you know, like, the person with the strongest will in the world is the person who basically keeps peace for the entire planet just by wishing for it.
Yeah.
And so, since I've had, like, people having agency over their reality is a long-running mantra of mine since I've made it happen in my own life so many times against adversity, that, you know, living in a place where willpower and determination is what manifests your reality is kind of like my steez. So I would probably be happiest there as a normal human.
Nice. It's a little bit planescape-y.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, either I'm going to be a creature that is from that place, or if I'm a normal-ass human, I want to go to Sephiroth. So, at least, I would say, white day, because fuck that janitor and that fucking whistle. No. That's my humorous answer, really, like, any horror game. White day is a
horror game that I streamed.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Honestly, like any horror game, I don't want to be in Silent Hill. I don't want to be in Amnesia. Mm-hmm. I'm not really excited about any of those places. Yeah.
I feel like by not picking Silent Hill as my least favorite you place have, to be, I have tacitly endorsed living there.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Bloodborne has some charm.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of a single appealing place in Bloodborne.
It's not about the places, it's about the fashion. David's about the fashion.
That's true.
Well, and I feel like if you look at the straight up, like, you know, it's about the hunt. It's not about the end effects of the hunt. You know, it's the journey, not the destination.
Sure.
So thank you, everybody, for participating. I'm sorry if we didn't get to your response. If you would like to participate, these go up usually on Monday afternoons, thanks to Jala and Dennis. They work it out between themselves, who posts these and such. The Facebook page, if I didn't say, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. There we go.
The Grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so.
We were all here.
I know, right? Yeah, you're right. I realized that as soon as I was halfway through the phrase.
You do it.
What?
You do it. Tell us what you've been playing.
Yeah. No, because I played very little, I've been doing a lot of traveling back and forth and been very busy with stuff. I pretty much have just been continuing the Mega Man X Legacy Collection 2.
Oh, I've been watching you do that.
All right. You get the little
bleeps. I've been on my Switch lately, so yeah.
So it continues to be not good. I wouldn't recommend people get the second collection.
That's what I said, and you were like, no, I'm gonna do it. So what game are you on right now?
So I'm on Mega Man X7, and my motivation has kind of been sapped because it is so different, and because it's just kind of like not what I'm here for and not what I signed up for. I'll finish up my thoughts on Mega Man X6. Mega Man X6 is better than 5, I believe.
Yes, it is.
I feel like they righted the ship somewhat by giving some more standard levels, by evening out some of the bosses a little bit, but it is still a profoundly unbalanced game, and also very much unfinished. There are... it is interesting to look at, especially X5 and X6, and just kind of marvel at how they were able to take something that has such good bones, the bones that were kind of like established with Mega Man X, which is a god tier game, and Mega Man X2, which is still very good, right? And just watch them squander that by very just kind of gradually in some cases and very and very drastically in others, just losing their attention to detail, you know, such as like making you take leaps of faith into a new area and then oops, there were spikes there that you didn't see. That never happens in the earlier.
Dude, they are spike happy as hell. Yeah. Like, isn't there the ninja armor or something like that that they have that
X6,
is actually anti spike armor?
Yeah.
And like, you kind of like need to get that armor to get through part of it because it's ridiculous at the end of it how many spikes they put in there.
Yeah, and so thankfully, if you put on the rookie hunter mode, I believe that it makes spikes no longer inflict instant death on you. And I think that is like specifically a thing they do in X6.
Is that a new thing for this like remastered version, or was that in the original?
New thing for the remastered version. It's just it's an easy mode.
The rookie hunter wasn't in the original, if that's what your question was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just really ended up, I put on the rookie hunter mode very early on just because I just wanted to really just marvel at it. I think in the Slack, I talked about it in terms of, you know, it's kind of like a field trip, right? Except it's not a good field trip like Mega Man X or X2 were. We're like, oh, we're going to the zoo. In this one, there are still animals, but they're kind of, it's like a slaughterhouse. There's still animals, but they're just having their worst day, is what Mega Man X, X5, and X6 feel like. Additionally, they add that rescue system in X5 and expand it in X6. And I can go off on how shitty the nightmares are in X6. Just those ubiquitous enemies that can fly through all of the stage geometry and have a hitbox that is substantially smaller than their actual sprite.
Yeah.
But no, just like if you're going through the level and you do not rescue that Reploid that just happened to spawn in at the edge with a nightmare right on top of it, and that Reploid dies, then fuck you, it's gone forever, and you might not get the upgrade that you need or want.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is fucking garbage.
I understand.
I know that you warned me, but again, like, you know,
sometimes you have to put your burner, put your hand on that burner, you know.
Yeah, sometimes you have to walk that coastline for yourself.
Yep, yep, and yeah. You did it. So X7 is not going so swimmingly well, and I quit when I was ahead, and it was a good decision apparently.
So the thing that is making me hold out hope. And I can cut bait on X7 anytime, I guess. My hope.
Sure, you can.
Yeah. Apparently, X8 kind of pulls up a little bit. Who knows if that is just relative?
It's probably relative, bro.
It's probably relative. The thing that is inadvisable about X7, and I feel weird talking about these decades old games, like, you know, I'm making original points, but please humor me. The weird thing about X7 is they moved to PlayStation 2. They brought in 3D graphics, and 2.5D games are a thing, right? Rendered in 3D, but you still play on a 2D plane. Mm-hmm. Mega Man X7, however, they try and do this thing where you seamlessly go between side scrolling and three and 3D kind of like shooter sections. To accommodate this, specifically for the ranged characters, either Axel or X, not so much with Zero, but specifically with the characters who have the zappers. Well, guess what? You just have like a lock on for your gun. Mm-hmm. Don't take something as fundamental as shooting in a mm-hmm. Mega Man game and change it. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And specifically not for the better. Don't change something so fundamentally to kind of just accommodate this weird decision of obligation. Like, oh, it's 3D, so I guess it might as well be 3D, huh?
Yeah.
I'm not even that bothered by playing as like shitty Scrappy-Doo Mega Man, like Axel. Like, I know eventually you get X, you know, like his moveset. The idea where if you kill an enemy with like his special weak attack, you get to pick up the item and become them. Like, that's actually kind of a cool idea. It's almost like a WarioWare kind of thing. Or not a WarioWare, like a Wario World kind of thing. like that's fine. But yeah, it's just like the lock-on and the 3D stuff just change the feel and make it not. I don't feel like I'm playing a Mega Man game, and that's what I'm here for.
When I got to the first part like that, I was just like, I am not even in this game. Like, I have not even gotten anywhere in this game, and I'm noping out. Bye.
and I can tell that they're like they're trying to do some sly shit. Because the opening world, you know, after you play as Axel and learn how to do him, when you're introduced to playing as Zero, which for the most part feels kind of fine, you know, it's you're playing as Zero, you're doing the special attacks with your saber and whatnot. You're actually in like a more deteriorated version of the opening world for Mega Man X, you know, the crazy futuristic highway section. So they're trying to pull out those nostalgia heartstrings in order to make what they're trying to shove down your throat more acceptable.
Yeah.
So how does
this approach to like 3D X-Men compare to or X-Men?
Mega Man
compared to was it Mega Man Adventures or whatever? Because I remember that game being awesome.
Mega Man Legend.
Yeah. Mega Man Legend is good and fun, but primarily because it's more about exploring the 3D space and kind of a big expanding dungeon. The pace of play is much, much slower, and the entire thing feels like it is designed for the moveset that they gave you of, you know, running and circle strafing and stuff. Does that line up for you, Jala?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I saw that they were doing the next Mega Man game and they're releasing that, and it looks like it's the same design and style and whatever as the Mighty Number 9 stuff, and I'm like, no. No, why are you doing that?
I'm gonna jump headfirst into a blender. Yeah, so I will continue to report from the garbage fire. It has slipped over the bounds, and it is hopped to the next garbage fire. So, Mega Man X Collection 2. It is only recommended for people who don't like themselves, or for people who want a gift for somebody they don't like. Jala, gonna go to you now.
Sure. So. I finished up the rest of my demo time on Octopath Traveler. I completed Hanit, the Huntress's first chapter, and then I got to Cyrus the Scholar and began his first chapter. And I wasn't really all that interested in Cyrus's story, at least to the point that I've seen of it, but it may grow on me later, because when I first started Hanit, so I was like, eh, this is not very exciting. But then by the end of it, I'm like, oh, she's kind of like Princess Mononoke. Okay, wee! You know, and then I was like, okay, she's okay.
Well, what is her profession? What is Hanit's profession?
She's a hunter.
Hunter. Okay.
Huntress.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, Therion the Thief is still my favorite, which is convenient because he's my main guy. So yay. I'm sure I'm going to eventually be picking it up, but it's like it's got to go on sale or something first. $60 is a lot of money, and I don't have $60 right now.
Right.
So no to that. So I will now talk about something that somebody else has played again before I talk about the thing nobody's played. So I for my birthday, I was given Vampyr by Briar. So thank you, Briar. Surprise, Briar. I'm actually playing it a lot sooner than we were talking about. Because I was like, I don't know when I'm going to be out in my building, you know, in my office to play this game on my computer. I have not been playing games on my computer very much. But we happened to have some rain, and it happened to not be thousands of degrees in there. Mm-hmm. And so I happened to go out and play some of it on a weekend. And the fun thing about playing a game that somebody else has already played on here is that I don't have to talk about anything important. You've already talked about everything that is important and all the mechanics and shit, so yeah. I can just go off the rails. Yay, Jala Wandering Commentary. For me, I don't know if you had said anything about it to this effect, Cole, but for me, this game really kind of strikes me as being reminiscent of Dishonored.
Yeah.
Because you kind of like blink around, and it's got, you know, the same sort of dystopian vibe to it and everything. I mean, it's not the same situation, but there's a lot of elements to it, and a lot of the character designs and stuff look exaggerated and kind of ugly the way that they do in Dishonored as well.
Yeah, so a lot of rats.
Yeah, and like rats and stuff everywhere too. So, yeah, and now that I had been thinking about that for a while, I kind of want like a Vampyr Dishonored game. Like, that would be super neat. I would be very excited by that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I finished the first couple of chapters. So I finished some bosses. I got settled into the hospital and all of that other fun stuff. I am in the middle of doing, I don't know, what am I doing now? I just finished with Lady Ashbury's first part, where, you know, like you talk to her, you get information, and you deal with her particular blackmailing issues. And that's about where I'm at in the game, where I left off. I'm in the beginning of chapter 3.
Awesome.
I had not done very many of the citizen quests. Actually, it's kind of weird. Like, some things I didn't really like. I don't know how to quick toggle between my primary weapon set and my secondary weapon set. And I can't find a place in the menu that tells me, you know, like in the keybinds or anything.
Right.
So, and then I just discovered that I have like a quick dodge. I didn't even know I had that. Mm-hmm. And things like that, that I'm just like, oh, this ease of use things. It would have been nicer if they had made this a little clearer when I was doing some stuff. I mean, not that I really want a super tutorial or anything, but like, you know, having something pop up on the screen somewhere and just say, hey, you know, press this.
Or just like a reference menu for techniques and stuff.
Yeah, or like a reference in the menu would have been fine.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm still getting used to all of that, those control types of things. Like, I still don't know how I managed to when you're in vampire mode or whatever, vampire view, dark vision, whatever they call it, and you notice that there are people who are being sneaky and you hover on them, and then you're supposed to push like some button, like you get the little eye over it so you can, you know, eavesdrop on them. But then I don't know what button I'm supposed to push. I did it once and I have failed to do it every time since. And I'm like, what button am I, what am I supposed to push? And then like, there's no reference, no place for me to find that information anywhere in the menu again. So I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
Is this sort of like a Watch Dogs type thing where you're like, well, in this case, I guess probably reading people's minds or something, or is this literally press a button to hear things?
You're literally eavesdropping on whatever they're doing at the time. And it's just so you can figure out people's motives and find out hints about their character to unlock all of their points so that you can get your max value for your money when you drain all of their blood out of their body. So,
All the stuff that you're saying lines up with what I kind of noticed in the admittedly short time that I spent with it, which is the fit and finish just kind of isn't there. Like, it's not the most polished thing from an interaction standpoint. So
And some of the models are like kind of janky. Like their lighting is real weird. Like that, you know, like the inside of their mouth and like their tongue and shit is like, highlighted as if it's in the fire, but the fire is behind them. Yeah. So like they're just got like a crazy glowing mouth, like they're some kind of demon and things like that. Or like they're like Lady Ashbury, I just went over to her and was talking to her and I couldn't get over it. Every time that she was leaning forward a little bit, her head would kind of like noddle a little bit. you know, like kind of vibrate back and forth a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't even know how to describe it. And I'm just like, wow, that's kind of janky. Like, isn't this like a, you know, important, like a big title or something? Wow. So I don't know. Well, anyway, so those are just little nitpicky things. I liked the thing they did when it went all red light special and you have to get, you know, have your first kind of fight against or surrender to your vampiric nature for the first time when that comes up as a thing. And then also there's a scene where you as a doctor are performing a surgery and you have like all this blood in front of you for the first time since being a vampire, and you have to figure out how you want to deal with that. And that's pretty cool. I like the way that they are doing that. I also...
You're saving the dude's life. He's not going to complain if you, you know, take a little sip.
Yeah, it's a tariff, right?
Take a little off the top. So what, Cole?
I'll just take that clean. Did you run into the scene when you were making your initial escape from the corpse pile where the game's tutorial, or I believe even just it automatically did this, made you pick up a rat and give it the slurp?
I don't remember if it made me do that or not. Why?
Yeah, I thought it was a really great kind of establishing moment. Like, maybe I even just did it by accident by pressing X at the wrong time.
I already knew that I was supposed to be eating rats at some point to get their blood because I had heard you talk about it. But also, I'd seen Interview with the Vampire, and I remember Louis doing the same thing and like eating all the rats and chickens.
Yeah,
you know, you'll soon run out of chickens, Louis. So, you know, that kind of a thing. And so, you know, like I don't. It made no impression on me.
Yeah.
If it was forced or not, I don't know.
There's a wonderful bit of dialogue or monologue or whatever, but like, you pick up the rat, you feed off of it. And your character, I forget his name, unfortunately, Jonathan Reed, he just says like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm doing this. And it's just so fucking disgusting, but I can't stop.
Yeah.
Like, that was just such a good characterization.
Oh yeah, for sure. And actually, now that you mentioned the character, I like the main character, and that's actually pretty rare for me to say that I like the main character of fucking anything.
Right.
But, like, I do. And, it also helps that I'm listening to David Copperfield as read by Richard Armitage.
Okay.
So, like,
that'll do it.
Yeah, that, you know, you guys know that I'm a sucker for a nice voice, and I also like Jonathan's voice from the game as well. So, you know, like that, plus I'm already in the mode for that because of listening to David Copperfield. Yeah. So, yeah, and also, according to Mai, there's some kind of controversy about the gameplay mechanics, but they seem okay to me. I don't know what the complaints are about exactly. Do you have any idea what there might be complaints about with the mechanics?
I'm not tuned in to any kind of controversy with it. If it's anything, it is likely just what I mentioned before about the fit and finish not being there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it plays fine. I don't have a problem with that. It does feel kind of like there's some tidbits that are just like, okay. Yeah. This is a little bit janky, mildly janky, but not so much so that it's frustrating to play or anything like that. But either way, like, I am enjoying my time with it. It's cool. Like, don't expect it to be, like, the most polished game ever if you do pick it up, but it is a lot of fun. I have eaten two people, if you want to know.
What combat skills are you pursuing?
I literally just am using the blood spear, and I'm just pumping up my stamina and my bite a lot. Nice. I'm biting the shit out of everybody.
that's not what you're supposed to be eating. It's the blood, but not the shit.
Yes. Har har. So funny.
Do they have a sort of the Vampire the Masquerade type of mechanic with, having to feed on people without necessarily killing them? Is that a thing, or is it pretty much just you off people?
If you feed off somebody in combat, you get blood, stamina, and life regeneration back, which is fine. The purpose of feeding on citizens that are in this world is to get experience points so that you can level up. And you get a bunch of points from that, and you get you might get 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 points from eating a person. Whereas if you fight somebody, you might get 5 experience points for fighting somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you can do quests, which is like the other way to get XP, but then you have to do a bunch of random quests for citizens, which also then, makes them, their blood quality go up or something, and then you get more experience for eating them. So
And do you have to kill them if you feed off them?
Yes. If you feed off a citizen, they will die.
Yeah.
So, and then there's also repercussions for doing so, like the stability in the region that you are in goes down. People will start getting sick depending upon the quality of the overall condition in that area.
Yeah.
And then also, if they have a partner or if they are associated with somebody, that other person starts to miss them and starts having reactions to, the person being missing. Like, you could eat one person, but then they have a lover or whatever. And then you've got to, deal with the fallout from that. And
so then you have to eat them.
Right. Well, the people that I have eaten, like, one of them didn't have anybody else connected to them, at least not in this particular area of the city.
No.
And then the other person had a crazy woman attached to them, which nobody pays attention to anyway. So it didn't really matter in either case if I ate them. Plus, they were terrible people. So,
well, yeah.
So it was okay.
The social graph system is, if not entirely, kind of like just sprawling, it at least matters, right?
Yeah.
Like that's how you convince people to like tell you stuff, is by ingratiating yourself to their friends.
Yep. So, and that's how you find out all your stuff. You spend a lot of time talking to people in this game too. Yeah. Like, it's not super combat oriented. Like, it, I mean, yes, there's combat to it. Yes, there are parts where you're fighting, but you spend as much time, if not more time, talking to people and trying to figure out information and trying to do investigations and things.
Right.
At least from my time so far.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so I've been playing that. I put in about 9 hours, I want to say, so far into it. And that might be like an inflated number, but that's because I wander everywhere, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just wander around.
I never would have guessed.
Yeah, me, of all people. So Yeah, so that's that. The last thing that I played is The Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker.
I am very curious to hear about this.
I know. That's why I have to cover it. So I finished it top to bottom. It is all done. Basically, I loaded up my Switch. I was playing Octopath Traveler. When that was done, I picked up something random, as I do. So this is a full FMV, Cthulhu-esque murder mystery game. Mm-hmm. You're a psychologist that takes over for Dr. Decker, who was murdered, and you're trying to both cure his patients and figure out who killed him at the same time. And all the patients have psychokinetic abilities of some kind. They have the ability to teleport, or they have the ability to resurrect people or something like that. And you find out all this stuff as you go throughout the game, how all of that plays out.
So and you can't just resurrect Dr. Decker and be like, hey, who did it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, see, there's plot stuff about that. So anyway, depending on the choices that you make, the killer will change from game to game due to the number of insanity points that you rack up, which I didn't see a metric anywhere in the game that shows you like an insanity meter or something. But apparently that's like an invisible ticker depending upon what your answers are.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only made aware of that insanity point thing by Greg, who started playing it when he saw me playing it because he had been interested in it. And then when I started playing it, he's like, oh, now I've got to try to play it. So when I hear about it on the level, you know, that kind of thing, playing along. And I'm not intimately versed about the insanity points. I don't know how that all works out, but apparently like from 1 to 50 you get this ending and this is the character that did it, or right. From 51 to 100 it's this one, that kind of a thing.
How are sanity points or insanity points doled out?
It's all depending upon what your choices are in the dialogue options when you are talking to people. Like, they will ask you, do you think that I'm crazy, doctor? And, like, you can say yes or no. And then, like, you know, all of your follow-ups, how you respond to them, when they ask you for advice, what advice you give them, all these different kinds of things change, your insanity level. And right. If you, like, choose to believe that they have these powers or whatever, like, it varies, that drastically changes what comes next.
Right.
So it plays similarly to Her Story, but not entirely so. You basically have preset questions and responses that you can select to progress each of the dialogue trees with each of your different patients. But you also have the ability to type in additional questions and responses. And you actually have to type stuff in order to get all the information you need. And oftentimes those preset questions or responses aren't enough. And you actually have to stop in the middle of the conversation to type questions about specific things that the character is saying while on that string of dialogue, or you're just going to forget some of the details. Like, you have to follow up with a word, like they say that somebody seems a little bit funny, and then you have to ask what the hell they mean by that.
Yeah.
What do you mean this person is funny? There isn't a dialogue option in your menu to pick that, so you have to type that in.
Yeah.
Which of course on a Switch means you have to sit there on the little virtual keyboard and rat-a-tat-tat with it, which is kind of irritating.
Yeah.
So there is a hint system to suggest what you need to ask next, but it literally just provides you with additional questions you can ask, and it's blocked behind a time barrier. So there's a cooldown before you can look at another hint.
Okay.
So, like, the selection of difficulty at the start of the game is just how long you want the cooldown to be, which is bullshit. Like, doesn't make it more difficult. If they'd abstracted the hints or something, that would have made it more of a challenge. But adding a larger time barrier, it just means that if you're stumped as to what kind of trigger word you need to be using, you have to sit there and wait longer before it comes back. And sometimes it's a little bit janky, because sometimes the questions that you have to ask are redundant. Like, somebody says, I'm being followed. And then she explains all about it. And then you're supposed to say, you're being followed again. Like, what the hell with that? Why would you need to do that? I thought we covered that already, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And later in the game, I had to look at the hints a lot, because I wasn't always phrasing my questions the right way. Or I didn't realize when I needed to ask about something that was already explained, Like, you have to verify the information again. Like, we covered this. Why are we having to go over it again?
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to word things in a really specific way in order to trigger the next cutscene. And sometimes those questions that you have to ask in the cutscene that follows don't line up. And what I mean is, like, you will ask the, you know, ask why a patient went to this place, and then the patient replies as if you'd accused them of something, which has nothing to do with going to the place, but, you know, like the question or, you know, whatever, your prompt and then the cutscene don't line up because you're entering that in by hand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and then sometimes, like, literally, if you get a hint and it has the wording of the question just so, you can't just pick out the keywords. You have to type the question the way that they have it in the hint in order for it to trigger it sometimes.
The classic parser problem. What is this thing called?
Yeah, and that's irritating because it's not all the time that it happens, but like if I'm on a Switch and I'm sitting here having to tap with my fingers on the screen to get
that
it
sucks.
Like, oh god damn it, you know, that's irritating.
Yeah.
So I'm complaining, I'm telling you all the snags and stuff so you guys are aware when you go into the game what's going on. Mm-hmm. I will say that overall I like this game. I'll wrap up thoughts in a little bit here. So, like, you get evidence throughout the game, and when no new evidence is presented to you before you even look at it, the notes about what you need to consider are added into your little notebook, and the characters who know about that piece of evidence refer to it, and you haven't even watched the video or read the note or gotten, you know, to the point where you've seen all of this stuff, but then the characters are talking about it anyway, and you haven't even, you don't know what they're talking about because you haven't looked at the evidence yet. So that's another thing to consider. Also, when you get new information, sometimes you have to get stuff from the patients during a given session, but you have to talk to them in the order that, you know, the game is trying to tell you. Like, for an example, at one point I was supposed to get a photo from one patient and show it to another patient. Instead of getting the photo, I opted to talk to the second patient that I'm supposed to show the photo to first. I did not have the photo yet, but I talked to them anyway because I wanted to see what they said before I got the photo. But in the dialogue, I hand over the photo, and even though I hadn't actually gotten it yet, and he responds and the game proceeds, even though I hadn't even talked to the first character to get the photo.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, they borked their flags.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Like, the sequence of events is pretty bad. But, like, you know, sometimes it's not all the time, but there are cases where that happens. The snags aren't so bad as to make this game unenjoyable to play. It just kind of feels a little clunky at times, but I would still recommend it because the overall story, the way that you find out the information and all the little pieces of information, like, I still don't know exactly all of the stuff that's going on in this game, and I need to replay it a few times to figure all the stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then two, because the game itself has a sort of organic flow to it, and, you know, the results of it change, like, your character can go crazy. Hmm. You know, that's why you have insanity points. Your character can go nuts, flip out, and turn into a Cthulhu nightmare, I guess.
That's pretty
You can also help some of the, you know, some of the patients and cure them, or you can also consequently not help them, and then they all end up in these screwed up situations and things like that. So, like, there's different aspects of the game that are very malleable depending upon how you go about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it's kind of interesting that way. And there were some times where there would be, like, a new character who had some power or another, and then, you know, I'm talking to him, and I answer with, like, you know, the crazy answer just to see what would happen, right? And then, like, they vanish and never come back. I thought they would come back at some point, but they really didn't. No, like, they died or whatever happened. So, you know, so, I mean, like, you know, if you're jacking around, just be aware that everything has a consequence, and that consequence may be, like, the end. So, which is kind of cool. I like the fact that it's like, nope.
Yeah.
That guy's going
fragile and mysterious.
Yeah. So, anyway,
So here's my question. Yeah. Sorry if you were going to, we're working toward this FMV game. How are them performances?
Fine. There were some parts where you could tell that they were trying to remember their line or, you know, phrase their line a little bit. Every once in a while, there was, like, a little bit of a stumble, but they, otherwise, no, their performances are good. They're not hammy or, you know, crazy or over the top. I mean, grading on an FMV curve, especially if we're grading on a curve, like, no, these are fine. Yeah. So
Who is it that's returning a person from contradiction?
That is the quantum physics doctor who shows up.
Okay, and who was he in contradiction?
I don't know, because I didn't play Contradiction.
Oh, I thought you played that.
No, everybody keeps on telling me that I need to play that game, and I have not played it.
It's pretty amazing. Damn it.
I know, people have told me it's on a docket somewhere, then I will forget all about it the next time I'm looking for a game to play.
Hey, Jala.
So, yes.
Real quick, Contradiction is a very good game. If you like this, you would probably like that one too.
Cole.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to play Contradiction for me.
Cole. I'm going to get mad, Cole.
No, I'm just...
I already know.
Don't make Jala give you more recommendations for Soulsborne games you could try.
Yeah, no, I'm just doing some cosplay as my Twitter timeline.
Yes.
Continue. So,
but anyway, no, this game though, the Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker, I would recommend that you play, Cole. Mm-hmm. With the caveat of understand that there's some clunkiness to it in the mechanics in this way. So set it down to easy, because you don't really need to have the timer go for like 2 minutes before you can check another hint when you get stumped. You don't need that. I don't even know why there's a timer. It's stupid. Like I said, if they had abstracted those hints instead of just blatantly giving you questions, then that would be different. But whatever.
Should I stream it?
I don't know if watching a bunch of FMV cutscenes and then you trying to figure out what to type in next is exciting, but if it sounds exciting to people, then go for it. It's just that, like, you know, understand that the type of game that it is kind of like Her Story in so far as how it plays, where you're like typing in a thing to see a video. Oh, now I've got it.
Yeah.
And then you make a decision. It's like, it's kind of like streaming a visual novel in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, except you also have the added confusion of having to type in stuff to figure out how to unlock everything.
Yeah. The reason I ask, it's
a good game, but like, and you've streamed other things that are weirder and more intolerable to watch. So. So, like, if we're going to grade on the Hex Crank what's been played already scale, yes, you can totally do this on a stream.
Okay. Oh, I'm happy you liked it.
Oh, it's a good game. It's a good game. It's clunky, but it's pretty good. So yeah, you would enjoy it, I think.
There are worse sins than clunk.
Well, I definitely. And it's not unplayable. It's not buggy. So that's good, because I played another game on my Switch that it's called North. I tried it. I started getting into it. I started posting screenshots, and then it just, like, I don't know what happened. It bugged out and died, and then, like, started over from the beginning. But there's no saves, so I just lost all my progress, and I'm like, I'm not doing that again.
Is it based on the Rob Reiner movie from the 1990s?
No.
Oh, weird. Okay, that's good. That was a bad movie.
But anyway, so, like, that was an experience. It's not buggy like that, where it just makes you go, fuck you! You know, like, it's just a little janky. But
cool.
Yeah. Good stuff. That's all.
Okay.
David.
Hey. So I've been playing Fallout 4, which probably isn't surprising. Let's see here. So the main thing I've been doing actually is getting into the railroad kind of storyline.
The underground railroad kind of thing for the synths.
Say that again?
The underground railroad kind of thing for the synths.
Yeah, exactly. So there's basically a faction that's group of people that are trying to smuggle synths out of the Institute, which are the Institute's the remains of MIT that has decided to start making more or less Terminators and use them as slaves.
Right. What could go wrong?
Say again?
What could go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. And so a lot of it I guess what makes this compelling, I think, is a couple things. One, it really doubles down on kind of the cloak and dagger type of storyline. Because, since I guess I should say, not only can they make robots that pass as people, but they can make robots that can pass as a specific person. So, at any point, if they're able to like capture, one of the members of the railroad, they could theoretically just replace them.
They could body snatch them and use them to take the place down from within.
Exactly.
Ooh,
And
that's
so
yeah.
it's a thing where, like, in order to join up, you have to, like, jump through all these, hoops of, like, following all these, riddles to, find your way to actually find where their hideout even is, and, stuff like that. And then, ultimately, you get a, once you join, you're teamed up with the with the organization's intelligence officer, who's named Deacon, and he's just a really, really compelling character. He's one of these guys. One, he's just very funny. It's very much kind of the like semi-cynical, kind of devil may care type of personality. But he's one of these guys that he's kind of rides the line between like his entire life is oriented around the him being a spy basically, and maybe carries it just a little bit too far.
No, it's hard not to.
Not so much in like the what you'll sometimes see in like a Casino Royale type of thing where he's like a psychopath, but more where he's a little bit like just borderline conspiracy theorist. It establishes that apparently none of the characters actually, the other members of the organization actually know anything about him, because he, for example, like every couple years, goes to a cosmetic surgeon and completely changes the way he looks, has commented that this is included at one point spending some time as a ghoul, and at one point spending some time as a woman. So it's just very much that sort of thing. And then the other thing is he blatantly just almost everything he says is a lie. And so, like one of the more kind of endearing, entertaining things is all of the companions, as you build reputation with them, they'll periodically kind of call you aside and reveal more of their backstory. Except that his backstory are all lies. So like the first time around, he tells you that he's a synth. Late. I just got where he quote unquote revealed that he's actually the leader of the railroad, and the actual leader is just kind of this person that's kind of this puppet so that the Institute can't take him out. Stuff like that. So it's real quirky. It's also kind of does some pulls in some of the sort of spy movie plot where it's like the older agent training the younger agent. So, a lot of his missions will be him kind of running you through field ops. Another thing I really love is all of the characters, you can optionally equip them with equipment, or they'll just use their default equipment. And his default equipment, I can't quite figure out exactly how or when it does it, but pretty much like every time you lose focus on him, so like if you go into a dialogue with an NPC or like zone into a new area or something like that, he'll be wearing different clothing. So So he's just constantly changing up his disguise. So just the whole thing's just really, really well done.
Yeah.
The other thing I really like about it is that I feel like one of the problems with sort of these sorts of stories is, you know, Fallout's tried to do this sort of like, let's have an allegory for like racism before,
with ghouls. Yeah.
And I feel like one of the problems with that in games is that, you know, the alt-right notwithstanding, like we all live in a culture where like racism isn't okay. So it's always like, you know, oh yeah, I'm apparently, you know, the one person that's just instantly like, no, I'm totally cool with ghouls. Like, yeah, this doesn't bother me at all.
Right.
And I feel like I don't know if this was intentional or if it just ends up this way, but I feel like using the synths as your kind of your stand-in for that actually works really well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's kind of a thing where, like, I'm sure the people who were, obviously the people that were, members of the Underground Railroad were incredibly progressive for their time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm guessing there's a lot of, probably would not be particularly progressive by today's standards in a lot of ways.
Right, right.
And so when you're interacting with the synths, since it is something that truly is alien to you,
mm-hmm,
like there's a tendency to like do things and like without thinking jump into dialogue options that are like, you know, oh, I've never met a synth before. Can you now tell me like everything about what every synth is like?
being just a shitty ally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Like,
yeah,
it creates a situation where like that you can legitimately do, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's not built into the dialogue or the there are traps that we, you know, I mean, probably even for a progressive person today, you know, who might fall into like, oh yeah, the like, we're not a monolith and you should not treat us as such, and that might still be your instinct. Yeah,
right, exactly.
Right.
The other thing with it that I feel like I can't recall having seen in other kind of fantasy or sci-fi things that have kind of done their, you know, sort of allegory for race is, having different characters that have different views on the different synths, have different views on kind of what it means to be a synth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of like, you know, one of them, you know, very much like, you know, hey, I want to be human, you know, kind of just like, you know, I'm just a person, we're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, you know, one of the other synths very much has a identity as a synth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like just building into their allegory the real life notion of separatists versus assimilationists, etc. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And just like, you know, I can't think of something that's really has gotten into some of those sorts of issues. Similarly, there's, I don't know if they're going to actually explore this, but there's some issues of like, you know, certain members of the railroad are like, should we be spending time like helping people that aren't synths, or is like that not really our job?
Right.
Like so I feel like, again, I don't know how much of this is, you know, maybe I'm reading some of this into it, but it seems like a much more interesting, much more effective take on these sorts of things.
When they name the faction after the Underground Railroad, I think they're inviting comparisons. That's not exactly a subtle move on their part.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I will be interested to see because, you know, they do tend to, you know, play with some of that stuff. I'll be interested to see, like, if how, to what degree the the actual characters are in world aware of how on the nose that is. Just because, you know, it's a setting where, like, your average person may or may not have any idea of what, you know, life was actually like you know, before the bomb.
Right. Except for you.
Except for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah. And you actually run into this. Similarly, though, that also does make your interactions with ghouls a whole lot more interesting.
Just because they're like, what the fuck? You're giving all the sympathy to inorganics, and we're right here. Come on.
Well, and also just the fact that, like, you know, it's always funny because, you know, there's a lot of interactions where the ghouls will be like, nah, you don't know what it's like to know what things were like before, you know, all of this.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
well,
actually. Yeah. Okay. we are kin, you and I.
Right. Or just like fair, you know, some characters have basically just concluded that you are apparently just the world's most good looking ghoul. So I also love this was just like a random NPC bark, but I would love them to actually run with this is, you know, a lot of it is, you know, the NPCs will just kind of bullshit kind of wastelander tall tales.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them starts talking about ghoul whales.
Okay.
Which I think sounds kind of awesome.
That does sound awesome.
And so, what would you do with a ghoul whale?
Harvest it for ghoul oil.
Yeah, that seems plausible. So, yeah, other than that, I've been slowly ratcheting up the difficulty to the point where I'm now at very hard, which is the most difficult, the highest difficulty outside of survival.
Okay.
I have to say it's been interesting because normally I tend not to play games on, like, you know, their super hard difficulties. So it's kind of been interesting to get more in a position where I can kind of more analyze how that works.
Right.
You know, it's interesting. On one hand, I really like the challenge, but they do it predominantly by making it so that enemies deal more damage to you and you deal less to them.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wish they had done is have it not scale down your damage nearly as much for things like headshots, because it then can kind of mess up the experience of playing, say, like a sniper character, where the whole point is to, you know, be able to kill someone in one shot so that, you know, the people don't know where you are.
Yeah.
Similarly, I really wish they had done like Darkest Dungeon does, or I think XCOM does some of this, where they had made the survival mode features a la carte.
Yeah.
Because the actual survival stuff, I think, would be really interesting.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I'm not interested in, if you play survival, you have to use a single save.
Right, things right. Like that. You want something like New Vegas had.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So.
Yep. Well, did you have anything else?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. Cool. Well, I think that that satisfies me. I think it's a show. It is time.
It's time for buttons.
So let's button it up. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of The Level. We really appreciate you taking the time. Nothing much to promote at the moment aside from the usual things. Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Rate us and review us on iTunes, and please tell your friends. And, of course, show up again next week. Cool. So no sense in prolonging this. I have been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams at twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
I'm David Meyersmith, and I don't really stream. This, I will promise I will stream someday.
One day, perchance, to stream. Jala?
And I'm Jala-chan in places, or I'm Neon Sky's studio if you want to see my art, or I'm Fireheart Fitness for fitness. The end.
You're complicating the message, Jala.
I know. I'm complicated. I'm a complicated being. It's okay.
Oh. Well, how do I end this show? And it's not until next time. It's a
titles.
Yeah. So until next time, stick around for some titles. Okay.
I wrote some down.
Okay.
I wrote some down.
What you
I
got?
A couple of them down. One of them was just you shouting title.
Okay. Well, then go ahead and do your other one then so Cole can get the title.
Okay. So I had title. I had nerd psychic.
Okay.
I had noddle.
Yes, noddle.
Oh, what? I forget the context.
That was because I was complaining about Lady Ashbury's head in Vampyr doing the noddle.
Mm.
It's kind of like janky, wiggly head thing.
N-O-D-D-L-E.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I had, there are worse sins than clunk.
Okay.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, Jollet.
I have. You had me at spreadsheets.
Okay.
Agro farmer.
Okay.
Shitty scrappy doo Mega Man, which I know is not going to be a title, but I'm sorry. It was okay. Funny. Okay. And then jump head first into a blender. I like that one, and I don't know what it was in reference to.
Oh, man. It was about. Nah, I forget. I forget. I remember saying it, but.
You said it for some reason, and it was funny.
Yeah.
Did you have one?
Yes, sorry. I did. Elephant spores and morning pursuit.
So I would probably throw behind agro farmer would probably be my first choice of the ones that have been presented.
All right. I'm a fan of jump head first into a blender.
Me too. I like jump head first into a blender, although I don't remember what you're talking about.
would there be hard feelings if we outvoted you, David?
Yeah, no, that's good.
Okay.
What was that though? It was something they were doing with some game. Like
I forget. I know that I said it like in exasperation.
Was it about Mega Man?
Maybe?
You were talking about Mega Man X7 and what they did that screwed it up.
I feel like it was something I feel like it was something you said, Jala.
I don't know.
About like, oh, like at least it's not, et cetera, X, Y, and Z. And I was like, oh God, I'd rather jump head first in a blender.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That sounds like a reason I would say that.
We'll go with that. Whatever. It sounds good.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'm going to go. Jala, I'm sure it is incredibly hot where you're at. So I'll let you go into your main house.
Yeah. So I can go take a shower.
Yeah. All right, David, best of luck arranging your move.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah. All right.
Hang in there,
see
David.
Y'all.
Yep. Take care, everybody.
Peace.
Bye.